on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey there, I am Gary Parrish, columnist, television analyst for CBS Sports, and I'm coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Got a fun 3 hours planned for you today. CBS Sports' Bryn Stover, the fastest-growing country music star in New York City, going to join me in the next segment. He's on his way to the Final Four, so we'll talk Final Four with Bryn Stover. Then around 12:40 Eastern, ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski is going to catch us up on the latest in the NBA. NBC Sports' Kurt Heelan and The Athletic's Sam Vecenie going to be with me in the second hour, and we'll get into Buzz Williams' move from Virginia Tech to Texas A&M at the top of the final hour. But I wanted to start with Bryce Harper's return to our nation's capital last night because, man, it was something. I'm sure most of you know the basics by now, but let me walk you through it. So the day starts with Bryce Harper in an Instagram post where he, bullet points basically everything you say if you're Bryce Harper going back to Washington, D.C. for the first time as a visitor. Really enjoyed his 7 years there, created lots of relationships, made lots of memories. He'll always cherish his time, so on and so forth. And then at the end of the post, he said, I am expecting some boos tonight, but it won't change the way I feel about Washington, D.C. And then the game started after a short rain delay. And when he took the field, it was mostly boos. And when he approached the batter's box for the first time, it was mostly boos. I'll be honest. I thought it was worse than it ended up being worse than I thought it would be, and also completely undeserving. I talked about it a little bit yesterday toward the end of the show that I didn't understand why Nationals fans would be upset with Bryce Harper. And yet there was the mayor of D.C. posting on social media about him being a traitor, and the boos were incredible throughout Nationals Park. And I thought people understood it. Perhaps they don't, or maybe they do and just don't care. But there was an amazing story in the Washington Post 2 nights ago that posted that detailed how the contract negotiations went between the Nationals and Bryce Harper. And the truth is, they never made a serious offer to make him want to come back to Washington, even though he made it clear to them that he wanted to come back to Washington. The first offer he got, it came during the last home game last season during a rain delay. And it was for 10 years, $300 million. That's what was reported at the time, but there was some special circumstances surrounding that. It was 10 years, $300 million, but nearly $100 million of it was deferred money to as late as 2052. Well, he wasn't going to take that contract, but he thought, okay, well, this is a starting point. We'll see where we go. And then he didn't get another contract offer until January. And after he made it clear to the Nationals, he didn't want deferred money. He wanted lots of years. He wanted a no trade clause and a no opt out clause because he didn't want to have to answer questions for the rest of his career about where he's going next. He didn't like that doing that early in his career. He wanted to have Washington or wherever else be his home. And the next offer he got after explaining all of this to the Nationals was 12 years, $250 million. So it was 2 more years, but less money, but also deferred money, all the way out, according to Washington Post, till 2072. And at that point, Bryce Harper acknowledged, well, it looks like they don't want me back. Because what he ended up getting was a 13-year, $330 million contract with no deferred money. In other words, every penny he's going to collect is going to be collected by the time the contract expires. In other words, if you contrast the contract he accepted from Philadelphia with the last contract offer he got from Washington, it's $80 million difference. And so I know there were a lot of people in that stadium last night booing him, but I'd love to know which one of them wouldn't take a job for $80 million more dollars. Tom Celestino, I know, watched this last night. Can you rationalize Nationals fans booing Bryce Harper, or is it just, hey, that's what fans do? You can't try to make sense of it.
Well, as we said here, context matters. Fan being short for fanatic, context doesn't always creep its way into a fan's mindset. I was hopeful going into it that it would be more 50-50, and it wasn't at all. Having said that, I don't think he should have gotten booed because of what we laid out, how the contract negotiations went with the Nats, it's a lot to say to see your guy playing with a division rival.
Sure.
To say that he wouldn't get booed. So I expected it, but I was hopeful that it wouldn't happen.
I was hopeful that, listen, some fans, you just can't rationalize with them no matter what. You're either on our team or you're not on our team. If you're with us, we love you. If you're not with us, we hate you. In college basketball, this is true with coaches all the time. John Calipari was a god in Memphis for 9 years. Now he's the devil in Memphis because he left them for another program, even though any coach without Memphis ties would have left Memphis for Kentucky. Here, though, I guess the difference would be this. Memphis did everything it could do to keep John Calipari, and then John just left anyway. The Nationals didn't do everything they could do to keep Bryce Harper. And from Harper's perspective, think about this. You were there 7 years, 6 years an All-Star, MVP 1 year, and your MVP season, statistically speaking, is like one of the top 60 seasons in the history of Major League Baseball, according to people who rank that kind of stuff. Biggest star probably in the sport. And the offer you get, both initially and then the follow-up, are both grossly inferior to offers you're getting from other franchises and contrary to what you've made clear you want. Like if the Nationals said, well, we know what you want, but this is what we can do, and we'll eliminate the deferred money, and you can take this or leave that. I guess that's one thing. But when he says, I do not want deferred money, and they come back with an offer with deferred money all the way out to 2072, it's just almost like you take it. I would take it as a slap in the face. What, I did everything I could do for this franchise. I've made it clear I want to be with this franchise. I've told my wife to plan on living in D.C. for the rest of my career, and they won't even get within $80 million of what this other franchise is willing to put on the table for me. And so I don't know any, honest to God, any person on the planet who would have accepted the reported deals from the Nationals to stay in Washington as opposed to accept the deal that Bryce Harper accepted from Philadelphia. And I wish more Nationals fans looked at it that way. Perhaps some do. Clearly some do. But a whole bunch of them don't because the boos were pretty heavy last night. And then the game gets underway, right? And Max Scherzer strikes him out, so the place goes nuts. Next at bat, Max Scherzer strikes him out, and the place goes nuts. And then, in the national social media accounts, like having fun with it, like everybody's on board. This night could not be going better from a Nationals perspective. And then Bryce Harper turned into Bryce Harper. Single, double, and then a 460-foot home run with an incredible bat flip that just silences the entire park, except for the 500 or so Phillies fans who are out in right field. And you suddenly realize this night could not be going any worse from the from the Nationals' perspective. Not to mention Trey Turner's got a broken finger suffered in the first inning. So, like, your young star gets hurt. Your former star is killing you. You're getting mocked on social media because you were trying to have fun with the first strikeout and the second strikeout. And now this guy's 3 for 5. He's just hit a 460-foot home run. And it could not, like, it's, I think, the first time since 2010 a former MVP has gone back to the place where he used to play and in the first game homered against him. And that is, like, a totally ridiculous fact, but it is a fact that I read last night on social media. And so afterward, Bryce Harper was asked about his return to Washington and the booing that took place. And here's what he said.
I heard the boos, but kind of just remembered that, you know, I have 45,000 people, you know, in the city of Philadelphia and more that were screaming and yelling their TV cheering. And, you know, I, you know, respect them so much. And I understand the game and understand the, you know, fan and player interactions and things like that. So, you know, being able to have them back at home, knowing that they're cheering and screaming at me, you know, through the TVs and stuff. And then also having the huge section in right field really fired me up and, you know, just really excited to be able to know that this place was filled with Philadelphia fans as well as Nats fans.
You know, he tried to afterwards say, and certainly in advance as well, you know, I'm used to being booed wherever I go. Like, my home fans have always liked me, and really nobody else does because they say he's too brash or too arrogant or too whatever, which has never made any sense to me. Like, if you were Bryce Harper, wouldn't you be arrogant? Like, I would. He's amazing. And I, even as a Mets fan, so the fan of a team that is a division rival of the Nationals. Like, I always liked Bryce Harper because I think he's terrific for the sport. Like, he played off the president's slogan once upon a time and said, make baseball fun again, as opposed to make America great again. And there was some pushback on that, but there's a lot of truth to it. Like, baseball would be better off, particularly with a younger generation, if there were more Bryce Harpers or people who acted like Bryce Harper, you know, hitting mammoth home runs, bat flipping the way he did, the way he does and did last night. So I've always enjoyed him. Never really understood why he was so divisive to casual baseball fans. But that's one of the things he pointed out last night. Like, I got booed in an opposing park. Not really unusual. But it's not the same thing. It has to shake you just a little bit. You know, it was just last season in the last game he played in that park. So the last two times he's played in that park, the last time was last season, final home game of the season. He got a standing ovation from those exact same fans every time he walked to the plate. And then last night, it looks more like when LeBron came back to Cleveland as opposed to what he had been used to. And even though he had acknowledged in advance of the game, like, he was expecting some boos, I bet he wasn't expecting that, because it was nasty and uglier than I thought it would be. And yet, he could not have handled the whole situation better. Again, 3-for-5 with a home run, and now the Phillies are 4-0 with Bryce Harper. Nationals dropped to 1-3 without Bryce Harper, and they're going to do it again this afternoon. First pitch is in a little less than an hour. CBS Sports' Brent Stover is headed to Minneapolis to cover the Final Four. I'm going to talk basketball with him next. I'm Gary Parrish, in for Jim Rome. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio. You know, some folks like to shop in a store while others prefer to do their shopping online. But no matter how you like to shop, when it comes to auto parts, shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They have everything you need under one roof, virtual or otherwise, from batteries, brakes, belts to filters, transmissions, ignition and shocks. O'Reilly has it all. They even have a full range of farm and agriculture, heavy-duty parts, tools, and supplies. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock and with brands you trust, like Wagner Brakes, Monroe Shacks, Shocks, Superstar Batteries, Wix Filters, and more. They can even get those hard-to-find parts, most with free overnight delivery, or you can shop online with free pickup in the store. Car lovers love to shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts, and now you can earn rewards points online and at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. In fact, you can earn points any way you shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You get $5 rewards for every 150 points you earn. Visit orewards.com and become an O'Reilly O Rewards member today.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show. Live from New York, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski is going to join me in the next segment right around 12:40 Eastern. Going to get the latest on the Kristaps Porzingis situation from Woj. But right now, Brent Stover is a studio host, play-by-play man, multi-purpose star for CBS Sports. When he's not on TV, he's drawing crowds to bars around New York City. Frontman of the Brent Stover Band. He's going to be in Minneapolis for the Final Four. But first, he's here with me. Brent Stover, it's your best buddy, Gary. How you doing?
Best buddy, absolutely. Gary, hey, I got an announcement to make.
Okay.
Mind if I use this opportunity?
No, we're on TV. It's a great place to announce stuff.
With this being the Final Four week, I have narrowed down the field to be my best man
at
the wedding to four, and you are in the mix. You have made the Final Four.
Now, what? Now, I always assumed I was in the mix. How did I just get, now? How am I going from, I was number one, I think, last week. How did I go now to just like top four?
Well, it's a little bit dicey. You know, it's all based on sort of the way you conduct yourself within the bullpen at CBS Sports Network.
Sure.
And from time to time, you get out of your lane just a little bit. You're trying to host the show, run me out of a job, which means I can never pay for a ring to find a bride anyway. And so it all kind of goes together.
Yeah, I've been having people telling me I'm getting out of my lane lately. I'm gonna try to just get back to being an insider. I don't know, maybe about 3 o'clock Eastern, talking to Brent Stover.
By the way, Gary, Wally Szczerbiak is in the Final Four as well, but you made a great point last week that you've got to be moved ahead of Wally because you are a very good-looking guy. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
But I don't want to take pictures and have those pictures last for the next 30, 40, 50 years with me standing next to Wally, and the bride is scratching her head like, well, how did I end up with this guy instead of Wally?
No, it's a problem. Every time I'm on set with Wally, like my wife would send me a text message. She'll be like, you know, I really like Wally's vest. And it's like, hey, I really like Wally's tie. I'm like, you don't like Wally's tie. You like Wally. Everybody likes Wally. Like, she's implying that if I was dressed like Wally, I would look like Wally, but I'm not dumb enough to think that.
No, it's crazy. You know, you mentioned I play country music. He came to one of my shows recently, and like, he's the one guy where he comes to the show, and all of a sudden, like, nobody cares about my music. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Wally's
like, no one's even paying attention. So no. I'm like pouring my heart out there, you know, like singing love songs about, you know, her blue eyes. You know, it's my big love song. And, like, no one's paying attention. They're looking into his eyes instead of listening to me sing about her blue eyes.
He does have beautiful eyes, though. I mean, you got to give him that, right? You got to give him that.
Yeah.
So you are headed to Minneapolis for the Final Four. We do not have Duke there. We don't have Zion. We don't have Gonzaga. We don't have North Carolina. We don't have Kentucky. We don't have Coach Cal. So we didn't get the Final Four most thought or even wanted, but it's still an interesting Final Four. What interests you most about this Final Four?
The coaches interest me most. I mean, think about it. Tom Izzo, to me, is the least interesting coach of the four because this is his eighth Final Four. And, yeah, it's been since 2015, which seems ridiculous to kind of question that, but Michigan State expects it every year. I mean, he's the least interesting because it's his eighth. I mean, Chris Beard, and you've been documenting it. You know, I was watching yesterday, and we've done so many shows together. By now, I can kind of figure out what you're going to say. And with Chris Beard, that's the story. He came out of nowhere, obscurity, and here he is, Elite Eight last year, Final Four this year, and he's such a likable guy at the podium. And I'm a sucker for that. I like these guys who you can relate to, who you want to have a beer with in the bar. So Chris Beard, Tony Bennett is like he's like straight out of a GQ magazine, and all he does is win games, except for he'd never been to a Final Four. And last year he's on the wrong side of history. So as much as he's the favorite in this thing, like for me it's just cool to see him rebound from losing to a 16 seed and be in the Final Four. And obviously, Bruce Pearl, I'm a big fan of second chances. And he had that three-year show cause situation with the NCAA. He paid his penalty. And now he's back on top in the Final Four. I think that's really cool. So that's for me, it's the four coaches. Is really fun to see this eclectic mix of the four guys.
Talking to CBS Sports' Brent Stover. He's on Instagram, Brent Stover_. You are a Kansas State graduate, a former Kansas State athlete, track star in the Big 12. Can you make sense for people of how improbable it is that Chris Beard has built a legitimate national championship contender in Lubbock, Texas at Texas Tech?
Well, and because I compare that, Sean, I knew you were on local radio in Kansas City last week, and they were asking you about, you know, the K-State job versus Memphis, where you live, where you went to school, and hands down, Memphis is a better job. And as much as I joke that, you know, that was a slap in the face, it's true. And I see Kansas State and Texas Tech as a similar type of job. And, you know, I mean this with all due respect to both schools. They are, I think, considered by the mainstream as kind of outposts, even though they are in the Big 12, which is one of the best conferences year in and year out. Manhattan, Kansas, Lubbock, Texas, it can be challenging to get guys to go to those two places. So because there's such a similarity between those two, I think it's remarkable what Bruce Weber was able to do getting K-State to an Elite Eight. Everything worked out in their favor with UNBC in the second round last year, but you consider him getting them to an Elite Eight and Texas Tech in the Elite Eight last year as well, and then Texas Tech a step further into the Final Four this year. I think it's absolutely one of the best coaching jobs, Chris Beard, this year that we've seen in in the last two decades. I mean, I don't want to overstate it, but it's massive what he's been able to do.
Incredible. I mean, he lost five of his top seven scores from last season's team. He's at a place where you're not going to enroll McDonald's All-Americans, and yet he's got them in the Final Four for the first time in school history. And I think it's important to note, it's not like fluky when Loyola Chicago gets there or VCU got there or George Mason got there. This is a team that projected much of the season as a, you know, top 15 team, top 10 team in the country. They were always a Final Four contender, and now they're there. I'm talking to Brent Stover from CBS Sports. Tom Izzo said yesterday that he feels like he needs a second national championship to validate his career at Michigan State. Do you think he really does?
I don't think he does. I think eight Final Fours. I think if he walked off tomorrow, if he lost in the national semifinals, one national title and eight Final Fours, I mean, Listen, fans, it's interesting to hear him say that. And I wonder if he honest to God, believes that deep in his heart, or if he's sort of playing to his fan base and his supporters. Because I just, you know, I mean, we have talked about this, you know, almost ad nauseum, that you create something and then all of a sudden the expectation, you create these expectations for yourself, and all of a sudden it's, you have to do that year in and year out. Well, he's created the expectations, and then he actually has lived up to them. And I don't care who you are, especially in this day and age of parity in college basketball, where teams like Loyola Chicago, Butler, and VCU, George Mason can make a run of the Final Four, to consistently make it deep in tournaments, and almost consistently, and really you could say it, consistently make the Final Four, that for me is enough. I've always contended this, and everybody I know disagrees with me. I would rather have my team, regardless of sport, in the hunt for a championship every single year than win a championship and then not be great for the next 8 or 10 years. That's just, I know Philadelphia Eagles fans, and we're around a lot of them at work, crush me for that statement, but it's just, it's how I feel.
I'm talking to Brent Stover here from CBS Sports. No, to your point, Michigan State has been one of the consistent winners in this sport, I guess since before Tom took over, but especially in the years that Tom has been in charge. And I'm with you. I don't think he needs to validate anything. Like, Tom Izzo could retire tomorrow and go down as one of the all-time greats. He's already in the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame. But I will say, a second national title puts you in a different place. There's a whole bunch of guys that got one, including Kevin Ollie, who's unemployed at this point. But
right. There's
only 15 guys that got two. And Tom Izzo's got a chance to become the 16th. And I really do think he's got a chance to become the 16th, because though Virginia is the favorite, Michigan State checks all of the boxes as a possible national champion. Top 10 in offensive efficiency, top 10 in defensive efficiency. The one thing he pointed out, and he does this voluntarily, which is something other coaches wouldn't do, is that, you know, he's been to the Final Four 7 times so far, 8th coming up, but he's only got one national title. That's not a great ratio, but I think you would agree with this. How many times has Tom Izzo had the best team once he got to the Final Four? Like, the answer to that might be zero, and so that 1 in 7 isn't nearly as bad as it might sound at a surface level.
No, absolutely, and it goes back to your discussion yesterday, which I thought was really interesting about Calipari, and you've been around him for a long time. I mean, has he won as many national championships as perhaps he should have, quote-unquote? I mean, yet he's getting a lifetime deal, and he deserves it. I think sometimes we overrate that. But, yeah, Tom Izzo, sometimes these coaches, again, they reach a level of success, and it's expected year after year. I mean, he's had teams where he had to develop them, you know what I mean? Like, in the last couple of years where, you know, early on in the season, they go through their lumps. Consider the Big Ten. It's the best conference, for my money, in the country. And now they play 20 conference games. I mean, it's ridiculous to be able to win this league and to be able to win games in this league, to even have a winning record in this league, much less be in the hunt to win it year after year, and then after that grind, go deep in March. I mean, I just, you know, to me, he's done. He doesn't have to prove anything. But yeah, if you get that second one, certainly it cuts it down into an elite class.
I'm wrapping up here with Brent Stover from CBS Sports. So when can folks in New York City see you with your guitar again?
You know, we play the Mason Jar every Wednesday night. We play the Waylon on Tuesdays and Mason Jar on Wednesdays. Those are both Manhattan bars. But the big show, and I got to say this, Bill Cowher's wife, obviously our cohort at CBS, the NFL Today, his wife, Queen V, has a big show at the Cutting Room in Midtown on Friday night at 7:30 p.m. It's April 26th, and it's called The Spring Fling, and I'm going to be opening for her at that, and that is a really cool event. You can get tickets at the Cutting Room, and then the next night we are actually headlining a show at a place just a few blocks away from there in Flatiron in Manhattan at Hill Country, named after, you know, Austin, Texas, Hill Country. It's a barbecue joint with an awesome stage in the basement, and really the best stage for a country musician in New York City, which is funny to even say that, to hear that, country music in New York City. But, yeah, the Cutting Room on Friday night, opening for Queen V, April 26th, and then April 27th, Saturday night, headlining at Hill Country. Would love for anybody local here to come out, because it's going to be a lot of fun.
That is Brent Stover, star at CBS Sports, frontman of the Brent Stover Band. Thanks, buddy, for being here. I'll see you in Minneapolis.
Appreciate it, GP. Enjoyed listening to you and watching you the last couple of days.
You're really nice. I'll see you, brother. That's Brent Stover from CBS Sports. We'll continue this conversation in the next segment, but right now, here's the latest sports update from Andrew Bogish.
CBS Sports Radio. Sports Flash.
And Gary, that update is sponsored by Geico. Great news, there's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Wilt Chamberlain had the only game of 20 points, rebounds, and assists in NBA history until last night. Russell Westbrook with 20, 20, and 21 in a 16-point win for his Thunder over the Lakers.
Unbelievable moment that I definitely won't take for granted. Won't let pass by. Just completely humbled and thankful to be able to go out and play, man.
Westbrook dedicated the effort to his friend, rapper Nipsey Hussle, who was killed last weekend. Former Braves manager Bobby Cox in an Atlanta hospital, the 77-year-old apparently suffered a stroke Tuesday. He's had surgery since. Cox, though, good enough to be seeing visitors. In Cleveland today, manager Terry Francona signs a 2-year extension through 2022. The day on the diamond about to begin with the Brewers going for a 3-game sweep in Cincinnati, then game 2 for Bryce Harper in D.C. at 1. His Phillies won there last night 8-2. And head coach Buzz Williams is leaving Virginia Tech for Texas A&M. I'm Andrew Bogish.
This is former World Heavyweight Champion Taz. Right after WrestleMania this Sunday night, we'll talk about all the matches and take your calls. 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific on CBS Sports Radio.
Tiki and Tierney head to Minneapolis to cover the Final Four. Tomorrow and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. It's March Madness on CBS Sports Radio.
Great games tonight. Raptors, Nets, Heat, Celtics, Blazers, Grizzlies. How about Clips, Rockets for On the Bench, 10 East, 7 West.
This is the Moose.
And I am Taz. We inch closer and closer to the Final Four. Who you like?
Join us tomorrow morning, 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific.
Live from New York, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
I am Gary Parrish, television analyst, columnist for CBS Sports in for Rome. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio. It's time to ask the pros where you, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link at cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. And then listen later on in the show when we might answer your question. It's 1240 Eastern here in New York. I was supposed to be joined by ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski in this segment. Something came up, breaking news, and given that he's the best newsbreaker in the NBA, he is occupied at this moment. So we don't have Woj, but I told you going into the last break that I wanted to stick with this conversation about the Final Four coaches that my colleague Brent Stover and I got into, specifically the part about Tom Izzo, because I don't know if you read the quotes from Tom yesterday, but in advance of leaving for Minneapolis to participate in his 8th Final Four, he said that he feels like he needs a second national title to validate his career at Michigan State. And what was interesting is Tom said that if a critic would have said that about him 5 years ago, he would have wanted to fight the guy, but 5 years later, he would agree with the guy. Like, he feels like he's got to add to this to cement his legacy as an all-time great. Tom, you tell me, is that just Tom talking, or do you think there's some truth to that?
I think that's Tom talking, being humble. As you said earlier, if he were to retire today, he's one of the all-time greatest coaches. I don't necessarily think he needs another one. I think it's more self-vindication. I do not think he needs a second title.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think he needs a second title to be labeled anything other than he's already labeled. He would get on a different list. Like I mentioned before, only 15 coaches at the Division I men's basketball level have ever won multiple national titles. 15 in the history of the sport. It's why when people get critical of John Calipari for only winning one, in the past 10 years at Kentucky. That's the critique. Yeah, he's been to four Final Fours in the past 10 years, seven Elite Eights in the past 10 years, but he's only won one national title. And as I pointed out yesterday, well, who has won more than that in the past 10 years? I mean, the answer is there's two guys, Mike Krzyzewski and Jay Wright. But John's been to more Final Fours than anybody in the past 10 years, and only two guys have won more national titles. So, yes, it's true, he's only won one, but most people who win one only win one. I think John sometimes gets compared to what people think he ought to be rather than what other coaches are actually doing. Because when you comparing to what other coaches are actually doing, he's had a remarkable run, dating back to Memphis, of course, but especially at Kentucky. And so with Tom, I don't think he needs it, but if he wants it and he feels like he does, then go get it. That's a pretty good opportunity. Virginia is the favorite, but Michigan State is right there. I told you previously, six of the past seven national champions in college basketball have been top 11 in both offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. The only team that doesn't check those boxes is the UConn team that was a fluky national champion. We'll still never figure out how they got that done other than Shabazz Napier was just amazing. But every other national champion, top 11 offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency. The only two teams left in this Final Four that check both those boxes, it's Virginia and Michigan State. And if Virginia and Michigan State end up playing on Monday for the national title, yes, Virginia will be favored, but it'll be a one-possession point spread on that game. So Tom's got an opportunity, a realistic one, I think, to add a second national title. And if he wants it and thinks he needs it, there's a part of me that hopes he gets it because I've obviously, as a college basketball columnist, known him for a long time. And several years ago, I think it was maybe 2011, we did a project at CBS Sports where my former colleague Jeff Goodman and I both decided to spend like 3 or 4 days on the recruiting trail with coaches at opposite ends of the sport. So one of us was going to like be on private planes and five-star hotels, and the other one was going to slum it, relatively speaking, with a low major, with a low level, you know, Division I coach. And so immediately I said, okay, I'm gonna do the private plane stuff. I'll let you do the 7-hour car ride stuff. And he agreed to it. I appreciated it. But I ended up spending like 4 days with Tom Izzo. And when I say 4 days with Tom Izzo, I mean basically every minute of every day that we weren't sleeping, we were together. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, in the gyms evaluating players, sitting right next to him as if I were a member of the Michigan State staff, on private planes, you know, getting from one recruiting location to the other, in car rides from the airport where we would land to the hotel that we were going, bouncing around within cities from gym to gym, back to airports. We're together 4 straight days. And I don't know if you've ever spent 4 straight days with somebody, but you run out of things to talk about pretty quickly, right? So what was it like recruiting Chris Webber and then getting burned at the end? You know, you can only have those conversations for so long. And so, you know, Tom and I don't have a lot in common. He's from Michigan. I'm from Mississippi. We're different generations. I'm not a basketball coach, but we are both husbands and fathers. And so we trickled in to those conversations. And I've always been fascinated by some of the things he said on that trip and rooted for him in whatever ways you can in my type of job, because I found us to both be, to have a lot of common ground when we got into those conversations. I have a lot of jobs. I travel for a living. I've been here in New York City like the entire month while my wife and children are back home. It's not the ideal way to live, although I'm appreciative of all the opportunities. Basketball coaches also travel a lot. They're away from their family a lot. And so we got into those conversations. And one of the things he said to me, he said, if you asked me to describe me, it's Tom Izzo talking, he said, what word do you think I would use? And I said, successful. That seems like a good one. He said, no, that's not it. Although I have been successful, that's not the one I'd use. I said, okay. Thinking like about wealthy. You're a multi-million-dollar a year basketball coach. How about I'll go with wealthy? It's like we're playing Family Feud, right? But I keep getting X's. And he's like, no, wealthy's not what I would say. And I said, okay, I give up. We're almost to the hotel. You tell me. He said, conflicted. I said, conflicted. That's interesting. Tell me why. And he said, because every minute that I'm working is a minute I feel like I'm missing something with my family. Like, should I be with my wife? Should I be with my children? Every minute I'm working, I'm wondering if I'm in the right place. I said, yeah, I know how that feels. He said, but here's the problem. Every minute I'm with my family, I feel like I should be working. I never feel like I'm in the right place. Because if I'm not working, I know John Calipari is. I know Mike Krzyzewski is. I know Roy Williams is. These other guys who are operating at the highest level of sport, am I falling behind because I'm not working every minute of every day? And he said, but then when I'm working, I'm like, you know, my wife hasn't had dinner with me in a week. You know, I haven't spent 2 hours at the park with my kid in a month. And so I'm totally conflicted every minute of every day. And his comments yesterday sort of reminded me of that, because he is somebody who is incredibly well-respected within his profession. You don't really hear people, other coaches, badmouth Tom Izzo. They all respect him as somebody who does his best to do things the right way and who gets the most out of whatever roster he has. Keep in mind, in this one-and-done era where Duke and Kentucky and other big-time programs like Michigan State are enrolling one-and-done prospects every year, Jaren Jackson Jr. last year was just Tom Izzo's third one-and-done player ever. Mike Krzyzewski is probably going to have four this year. Tom Izzo's only had three ever. And so for him to be able to win as much in an ever-changing college basketball landscape, despite not having comparable talent to what the other big-time programs have, I think is an amazing accomplishment, and why he's already in the Hall of Fame. But when he acknowledges publicly yesterday, but I don't feel like I've done what I need to do. Yeah, I've been to 8 Final Fours. I've won one in national championship. I've won 9 Big Ten regular season titles. I've won 6 Big Ten tournaments, but I don't have 2 national titles. You know, Billy Donovan's got 2. Jay Wright's got 2. Roy Williams got 3. Mike Krzyzewski's got 5. I'm sitting here with 1. I've got to get more. It reminded me of conflicted. This is a guy who, after he cuts nets at to win another regional or Big Ten regular season title or Big Ten tournament, I bet you he feels on top of the world. He'll tell you he does. And then yet, when he takes a step back, a little bit conflicted. Have I done enough with these opportunities? And like the point I made with Brent Stover in the last segment, how often has Michigan State gotten to the Final Four and actually been expected to win it? It's a little bit like the LeBron James conversation. I know people love to bang on him for not winning more championships, but how many times has LeBron James been in the finals with the best team? It's not often. And so, as somebody who has tried to make the case before that LeBron James is the greatest basketball player ever, I would love it if he had more championships, because it would make that conversation a little easier from my perspective. But in reality, once he's gotten to the finals, he's run into a better team on the other side more often than not. You don't have to take my word for it. Go look it up. LeBron James is supposed to have a losing record in the finals relative to what odds makers placed on the finals heading into game one of every single time he was there. And the same thing is true of Tom Izzo. He's got 1 national championship in 7 previous Final Four appearances. But how many is he supposed to have? Is he even supposed to have that 1? And so perspective, as it relates to this topic and most topics, I think is extremely important. And I think if you provide proper perspective to Tom Izzo and say, don't focus on the times you didn't win a national championship, the idea that you've given yourself that opportunity. Now, 8 times you've been in a position where you just needed 2 more wins to get a national title. And then way more often than not, you end up losing to a team that's just better than you, got better players, has been better than you throughout the season. That's nothing to be embarrassed about or ashamed of. You know, he constantly references his record against Mike Krzyzewski, which is now, I think, 2-11, but heading into this past weekend was just 1-11. And that sounds bad, again, without context. But, like, who's got a good record against Mike Krzyzewski? Almost nobody. Like, Mike talked about this last time Michigan State and Duke played in the Champions Classic, because people were pointing out, I guess then it was probably Michigan State was 1-10 against Duke under Tom Izzo against Mike Krzyzewski. And so Mike, without like Mike dropping on everybody, but certainly implied it, he was like, yes, Tom's record against me is not good, but whose is? Like, go look at my record against anybody. That's about what I do to people. I'm the greatest to ever do this. I beat almost anybody more often, way more often than they beat me, which is a fact, by the way. There's exceptions to that, but by and large, Mike Krzyzewski has an overwhelming record against just about anybody. And so the record against Duke isn't good for Tom Izzo, but almost nobody's record against Duke is good. The record in the Final Four isn't good for Tom Izzo, but that's about the record he should probably have in Final Fours. And I know he understands that on some level, but he clearly thinks, at least on also some level, that he needs to get at least one more to put himself in a different conversation. I really don't think that's true. I think Tom Izzo is forever thought of as one of the great Division I men's basketball coaches in the history of the sport, whether he finishes with one national championship or four national championships. But it is undeniable that if you get a second one, you're on a different list. A whole bunch of men have one. Only 15 people have two. And he's two wins away from putting himself on that list as the 16th person. Whether he can do it or not, I'm not sure. Again, Las Vegas has made Virginia the favorite in this Final Four. And, you know, if not for what Duke did down the stretch, specifically in the ACC tournament with Zion, Virginia probably would have been the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament for the second consecutive year. Obviously, it didn't go well last year, but so far, so good this year. So Virginia is the favorite, but it's not an overwhelming favorite. Like when we went into the 2015 Final Four, Kentucky was an overwhelming favorite to win that, even though it did not win that. Virginia's the favorite here, but it's not an overwhelming favorite. And so I think I'd bottom line it this way. Whether Tom Izzo needs a second one or not to validate his career at Michigan State is debatable, but he's got about as good as an opportunity as he's ever had since he won that first one to add a second one in Minneapolis. You would think because of location, perhaps the Spartans have not a home court advantage, but a significant fan base there, and whatever obstacles in front of them, they're not as significant as the obstacles that have been in front of Michigan State in other Final Four years. Russell Westbrook had an amazing 2020 game last night. We're going to get into that next. You're listening to the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.